And now, on the African American Athlete Sports Network, it's Express Yourself with hosts T. Ramon and Sko.
Express Yourself!
It's an hour packed with guests, opinions, sports news of the day, and off-the-field issues that impact play on it. And you, the listeners, will have an opportunity to express yourself on our call-in line as well. Now here's our Express Yourself hosts, veteran sports journalist Tim Turner and Roscoe Nance.
Hey again, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Express Yourself with T. Ramon and Sko. I'm Tim Turner, along with co-host Roscoe Nance, and we're looking forward to having another packed edition of the show this evening as we look around the world of sports, in particular football, because it seems like the word of the hour over the weekend was the word upset. It seems like they were all over the place. They littered the field in both professional and college football, more so in college football, especially in the MEAC. As things have gone all kinds of topsy-turvy there. And, of course, in the NFL, you had a major 1-7 beating 7-1, which hasn't happened in forever. But we will talk about that. We'll talk about college football in depth there. We'll have with us a guy who knows a little bit something about having to be more consistent with football, and that would be in Bowie State, which is the kings of the CIAA again this year. We'll be speaking with their coach this evening, Damon Wilson. And he knows a thing or two about championships, as he'll be back in the CIAA championship for a second consecutive year. Roscoe, how are you doing, sir?
Hey, I'm doing great, T. Raymond. It's, an exciting time of year, coming down the home stretch, in college football, and the pros are, getting serious about, what's going on there, and just a lot of interesting stuff, with FBS and the playoff picture taking shape, and FCS, and there are conference championships coming down to the wire, and Division II, their conference championship games this weekend, and their playoffs right around the corner, and then you have the action with Colin Kaepernick and his workout this weekend, and what does that really mean? And, then also you have some NBA action going, college with Kentucky being upended. So it's just a lot of stuff going on. It's a lot of stuff to wrap your head around and try to make sense of. And, we'll try to delve into it and see what we can come up with.
Well, yeah, when you're talking about the college basketball, it's almost forgetting that that didn't start 2 weeks in, and Kentucky was the number one for a taste. And Evansville took a $90,000 check and took Kentucky's lunch money at the same time and knocking off the number one team in the nation. Hats off to them. I think there was another win in the MEAC over they knocked off a D1 school in one of their preseason games. And this is the time of the year where it seems like the basketball teams fatten their coffers with these preseason games, where it's like you play November, December, you take your lumps, and then you get into your conference schedule maybe late December, then you start January, and you start conference play in earnest. But let's look at football first before we go anywhere else. We have the news out of the SWAC, where we have Grambling beating Alcorn, handing them their first loss of the season. And Alabama A&M cooling off Jackson State, so it's kind of tightening things up there in the SWAC.
Yeah, it did, because you have Jackson State sitting there with two losses, conference losses, A&M with two losses, and Alabama State with two losses, and Alcorn with the one loss. So it's shaping up, where it could be a situation where it comes down to the last game of the season, Alcorn versus Jackson State, with Alcorn needing to win that game to make a sixth straight appearance in the conference championship game. And, it's probably unlikely that Alcorn would lose to Jackson State. But in those kinds of games, you never, ever know. Anything can happen, because I remember full well us talking last week with our Commissioner Thomas, and I'm not going to say I told you so. But if I was going to say I told you so, I certainly would say I told you so, that it wasn't a wrap that A&T was going to beat Morgan State. But, you know, I'm not going to say anything about that. But you know.
I should have had you buy my lottery tickets this week for picking that, because you had both of those games saying that, you know, not so fast, my friend. And so that was a shocker on Saturday. And really, you know, you talk about coming to the last game of the season, but for what it's worth, this weekend may be elimination weekend in this way, where you got Alabama, A&M, and Alcorn's playing. A&M could be gone with a loss this week. The Alabama State playing at Florida State, that's not going to do anything within conference. All it's going to do is get their feelings hurt. They still have their two losses there, but Alcorn needs to win to stay ahead of Alabama State. A&M could be out with a loss to Alcorn. Southern, they got one loss, and they're playing at Jackson State, and Jackson State has a bit of some controversy going on over there with this football program right now. JSU needs to win.
It's a wide open weekend, a very wide open weekend, and Southern, they're in a very precarious situation in terms of what's going on there, because even with the coaching situation, because even though they are really in control in the SWAC West, the Jaguar Nation is uneasy, with the prospects, because they already lost to Alcorn again for maybe the sixth or seventh time in a row. And Jackson State is one of those teams that they always circle, one of those games that they always circle. So if they lose that game, and that puts them even with Grambling, and then they have to end the season with Grambling in the Bayou Classic. And if they lose that game, then, all bets off. I mean, that would mean that they lost to their three biggest rivals.
Right.
Grambling, right. Jackson State, and Alcorn.
And Alcorn.
And even if they beat Grambling and get to the SWAC championship game, if they don't beat Alcorn again, that doesn't bode well. So,
they need to win out. Early for Southern, it definitely has to win out. Losing early hurts them a lot.
Yeah.
They're not supposed to drop any games. So you played, for what it's worth, playing Alcorn, Jackson State, and Grambling, those are the three games where they have to really sweat. They should, every year they should be like around 7-0 or whatever their record should be until they play those three schools. And then if anybody's bad luck, I remember just being in Mississippi Veterans Memorial Stadium for some really pitched battle between Southern and Jackson State. I remember Aeneas Williams at Southern having a great game against Jackson State, due largely on the play of Jackson State's quarterback, who seemed to find Aeneas' jersey more than he found the receivers one Saturday afternoon.
Yeah.
It's always been an incredible matchup, either there or down in Baton Rouge.
Yeah.
So that's a game that bears a lot of watching. But Grambling, playing at Valley, that's not a gimme either.
Yeah, two games, 1978, that was my first year covering SWAC for the Clarion Ledger. And two games that stand out in my mind. The first was Jackson State Southern. They had about 50,000 folk at that game. Jackson State running the wishbone with Perry Harrington and Jeff Moore, both of whom went over 1,000 yards that season. Southern rolled in averaging about 35-40 points a game, had only allowed 7, and Cass Jackson was the coach. He had been at Morris Brown, but before that he was out at San Jose State out in California, and he came to SWAC, and he was going to teach these Southern guys, you know, how to play real football. And Jackson State just rolled from like 42 to nothing. I mean, it was ugly. It was very, very ugly. And the other game was Grambling versus Valley in Itabena. And Valley, they weren't good. I mean, this was way pre-Jerry Rice. They were bad. And Grambling, I don't know if the school was a scoreless tie or a 6-6 tie, but Valley tied them. So, you know, that opened my eyes. I mean, that opened my eyes wide open. SWAC football can be so very unpredictable. You know, that was one thing that I learned early on. My very first year, that anything can happen, and take nothing for granted.
Absolutely, and that conference, especially, like I said, this is wide open. It seems every game this weekend is going to mean something, with the exception of Edward Waters playing at Prairie View. So I guess that must be one homecoming down there in Prairie View. Edward Waters going way out of its league to play the Panthers. So,
well, anytime Edward Waters steps on the field, they're going out of that league, I think. I mean, you know, why? What's the point? I mean, what's the point?
Absolutely. We want to roll over to the MEAC, where you hit the daily double with the wins. Morgan State, they pull in a 6-point win over A&T, and Dell State, a 3-point win over Bethune-Cookman. And you're the only one that saw it coming or had an inkling that it was going to happen. And the idea that Dell State was up 16-0 at the half really, really surprised me.
Yeah.
They couldn't get it. Bethune couldn't get anything rolling there.
Yeah. So that sets up a really big game this weekend with, A&T and Bethune.
Right.
A really, really, really big game.
Identical records of 6-3 and 4-2.
Yeah. And I recall Sam Washington at A&T talking about Cookman early in the season, or maybe before the season began, how highly he regarded the Wildcats, you know, their defense, and the way he talked about their defense and offense, it sounded a lot like, you know, he was talking about his own team, you know, the strengths and all, the strong defensively, and, you know, good run game. So, and that's the thing that jumped out at me, is that Morgan State appeared to do a good job containing Jermaine Martin this weekend. For the second straight week, he was well under 100 yards rushing. So I don't know what has happened, but the running game seems to have fallen off. And, you know, they managed to overcome that against South Carolina State, but, you know, not so much against Morgan. So, and you better believe that Cookman, is, you know, took note of whatever it was that that Morgan State was able to do successfully, and they'll try to mimic that. So, you know, that really is the game of the weekend. That is really the game of the weekend.
And then again, too, South Carolina State is right there. Also,
right.
It's 6-3 and 4-2, and they got to play at North Carolina Central. They have they're on the outside looking in, but still, the people, they got a shot.
Yeah, you know, and you have to like their chances, because, you know, A&T and Cookman, then A&T ends the season against Central, which is always a big game, a rivalry game. And then Cookman ends the season against Florida A&M.
Right.
Another big rivalry game. And,
right.
you know, A&T's worst, the worst scenario would be to, I mean, it's possible for them to lose both those games. That wouldn't be,
right.
That's not out of the realm.
And you can really see Bethune probably coming up there. They may win the whole thing, in after 2 weeks,
if they win it, they will have really earned it.
Absolutely.
You know, but and I guess you could say the same. Well, any of them really, you could say the same. A&T, with having to end against Central. You know, that's a game that they could very easily lose. You know, it wouldn't be that big of an upset if they were to lose. So, I mean, I can see a situation where, Cookman beats A&T and then loses to Florida A&M.
Right. Well, you know what? You would think after this past weekend, after seeing all the carnage on the FCS and FBS levels, where, Minnesota falls behind by 28 and beats Michigan State, games like that, and then all the games that happen in the MEAC and the SWAC, the people will be wary of taking anybody lightly.
At this point, I don't think anybody takes anybody lightly. It's just sometimes it's just a matter of a bad matchup, a bad break, or it's just not your day, I don't see how, with so much at stake and you can see the end, that you can take anything for granted. I've watched a lot of college football, watched a lot of NFL football, but I never played college football. So you would know better than I would about players, coaches, or whoever taking opponents lightly. But at this point, I don't get it. If they do, I don't see how that's possible. I mean, that's just foolhardy.
Coaches always warn you against that. The week of practice, they make practice especially hard going into games against lesser opponents. So you will not do that.
Especially when you see it year after year.
Yeah.
It happens to somebody that you think doesn't have a shot. Comes up and win. And to me, that's when you see the losing team walking off the field crying and all that stuff, because they know that they haven't done what they needed to do. They didn't give it their best. But I feel like, and again, this is just simple me talking, when you go out and you give it your all and know you did your best, it's nothing to hang your head about. Sometimes other guys are just better than you.
Absolutely. On any given Saturday or Sunday, you'll see that those upsets happen. Now, rolling over toward the SIAC, which their regular season is over now, and I understand Savannah State tried to petition to get into the playoffs, and they were told no, which is probably to the advantage. They probably would have been the SIAC champions this year, but as it stands, last week's game, the Fountain City Classic. You had Albany State beating Fort Valley, and Albany State will be playing will be representing the East in the SIC championship game. And Miles, Tuskegee at Tuskegee for homecoming, and so Miles will be representing the West in the championship game this year.
Yeah, Miles quietly put together a good season. I mean, they had two losses.
Two losses, 8-2. When I saw that record, I was like.
Yeah.
Where did that come from? So
they're
5-1 in SIAC West and 8-2 overall.
They won 8 games, I guess, when nobody was paying attention. But again, they had a head scratching loss to Central State.
Right.
Go figure that one. So
like you try to figure the two in the MEAC.
Last weekend,
it's the same thing.
But this is an interesting matchup. This is like, I think, the fifth time maybe that Albany State and Miles will be playing for the conference championship since
They've been in the championship game.
Yeah, since the championship
game. It's like
game,
Alabama playing Clemson in the national championship game, isn't
yeah.
it?
Well,
you don't see that rematch over and over again.
Exactly. You think people were tired of seeing Alabama and Clemson, you know, but Albany State Miles, you know.
Then you get the game. It's at Albany, and which is maybe that's the
I think it's at Miles.
Miles? I thought it was at Albany. Okay.
I think it's at Miles. I think the West gets to host, I think, but
okay.
You know, I don't know that it matters that much, really. I'm not sure.
Because I doubt either one of them travel well. I put it that
right.
way. From what
all
I've
right.
seen this year in the SIAC, a few teams traveled well. Savannah State traveled well when they came to Atlanta for two of their games in Atlanta, but they were playing again in Atlanta. Not too many folks are gonna make the square away weekend to go to Jackson, Tennessee to see Lane. So.
Yeah. Well, Tuskegee travels well, but, can't beat anybody. So, that don't matter.
Right. And we're going to come to the CIAA later on when we have Bowie State. They are the champs of the North again. And, they're going to be playing Fayetteville State in the CIAA championship. And we'll come back to that later on when we have for the second half of this edition. We'll break all that down when we have Coach Wilson with us on that. Major college football, we talk about the upsets and what things have happened, how things are shaking out there, and then the new college football playoff rankings come out to no one's surprise after really not a surprising result, which I thought would happen. I just had an inkling that they would happen. LSU is a really good football team, and they knocked off Alabama in Tuscaloosa. The score was nowhere indicative of how thorough the LSU had beaten them down. So you have your top four teams right now. Were the season to end today? And if it was, a lot of folks would be surprised who bought tickets later on after this week. But you have LSU, Ohio State, Clemson, and Georgia. And it was a little bit of a head scratch for me to see Georgia ranked ahead of Alabama, just for the mere fact that Alabama is a legacy school and they only lost one time. Nonetheless.
Well, but they
had Georgia had a bad loss to South Carolina as well. So,
but Georgia is still the favorite in the East, right? And Alabama is still positioned; they're right there. Georgia has to play Auburn. Right.
Again, Auburn, A&M, the SEC championship game. They'll probably lose to LSU in Atlanta for the SEC championship game. But
and
that'll knock them out of fourth place.
And they can lose to Auburn.
Right. And that's this weekend on the plains over there at Auburn. So,
and
that's a holy possibility.
That's a game that they can lose. So, Alabama's position where they just need to win. They just need to win. But, you think about it, that position is no different than had they beaten LSU. They would still need to keep winning.
True, but, it's a different thing when you have to close your season out, Western Carolina and Auburn, and then the SEC championship game, where now they don't have to worry about SEC championship game because LSU has the West. Pretty much sewn up, unless they lose to Ole Miss this weekend, that's not happening.
Yeah, I'm sure Alabama goes into every game, regardless of who they're playing, thinking that it's a win. And Saturday's game, I guess the surprise to me was, given the way the game went, is how close it was at the end. And that said a lot about Alabama. Because, did you really think it would get that close?
Absolutely not. I thought it would stay the blowout that it was, but Alabama showed something to come in late. My thing was, and I could see Saban's head exploding, when they had a chance to stop LSU, near the goal line and make them kick a field goal. The kid goes for the strip of the ball
and
whiffs on the tackle.
They did that whole last drive. You know, they would you know, have the guy stood up, but nobody was wrapping him up and putting him on the ground. They were trying to take the ball, and you look around, he has a first down.
Right. And I looked at that, I'm like, okay, guys, you know, play football if you're trying to do something. And I just thought that was something that doomed them pretty early on.
Yeah, but that game's lost on the first possession. You know, they say you can't win a game in the first quarter, but you can lose a game in the first quarter, and that's certainly what happened. Because, I said before the game, I was talking to someone, and I said that what LSU can't afford to do is let Alabama get off to a fast start, because what Alabama does, they get the ball, they go straight down the field and score. They stop you.
True.
They go back down the field and score again, and before you know it, it's 14-0, 17-0, 21-0. But what happened was they get down, they go down straight down the field. Tua plays the ball on the ground. LSU gets it. And they go straight down the field. And by scoring there, you know, they already felt like they had a shot at winning. Then when they were able to move the ball as easily as they were, I mean, their confidence was through the roof. Then they come back and get the turnover on the punt and get a field goal. So, you know, they're doomed. They're doomed at that point. And
what is it about Alabama? They can never, ever, ever find a guy that's reliable in terms of place kicking. Because, the kid missed the extra point, and I'm quite sure Saban would have they think touchdowns more so than field goals, because they just haven't been able to find a guy that consistently does the job there on that. So it's going to be interesting to see how the things shake out in the next couple of weeks. Again, like you said, Georgia has Auburn this weekend. That's a test. They close out with they have their last two games are Auburn, Texas A&M, and Georgia Tech before the SEC championship game.
But you know, we got to look beyond the SEC and, you know, look at Ohio State and what they held before them.
Oh my gosh, Ohio State!
No, they still got to play Michigan. You know, and you know, that's one.
Do you really
one
think
one
that's going to be a problem? I mean, Jim Harbaugh does not
but
beat
Tim,
Ohio
but
State.
But Tim, Michigan has to beat them at some point. Michigan has to beat them
at some point. And maybe that's when Harbaugh's coaching the Cincinnati Bengals, but it won't be when he's leading the guys at Ann Arbor.
Well, I'm going to say it one more time. Not so fast, my friend. You know.
That will not happen this year.
Okay.
Book it, write it down.
Okay.
Ohio State will not lose to Michigan this year.
If Justin
Fields at quarterback,
Ohio State
will not lose to Michigan.
If you believe you're a sager, back up your words with a little wager.
Oh, okay.
One top hat chicken sandwich.
Okay, we'll do that. A top hat sandwich or Gus's on me. But that is never going to happen with Harbaugh in Ann Arbor.
And I'm not even a Michigan fan, so I don't even know what I'm talking about, but I'm going with that one. I'm rolling with that one.
You roll with that one, man. Let's switch over to from the college ranks, and we'll get back to college ranks when Coach Wilson comes with us. In Atlanta on Saturday, the NFL has arranged for a workout for one Colin Kaepernick. All the teams are going to be there to show up for that, and it's going to be interesting. I mean, there wasn't something that he did, and I saw something online today where Jay-Z said, yes, he did have something to do with it. Okay.
Well, I mean, the thing is curious because when was the last time anybody talked about Colin Kaepernick?
Nobody. But we'll have to come back to that, though, I think, right now, because as it is, we're going to get with Cap and what people think about that. But it just seems like the ship has sailed on that. But I know one ship that hasn't sailed yet And it seems like, you know, people need to be hopping on, not so much the ship, but on the bandwagon for Bowie State, because they are riding high again. They're undefeated this year, and they're going to be playing in the CIAA championship game against Fayetteville State this year. And we have with us tonight the head coach of the undefeated Bowie State team. We will be going with them right now. And with Coach Damon Wilson. Coach Wilson, are you there?
Yes, sir, I am. Thanks for having me.
Hey, Coach,
yes,
how you doing? This is Roscoe Nance. Good to have you on.
Yes, sir, good to be here, that's for sure.
Yep, and, you know, congratulations on an outstanding season. But, you know, it seems to me that, you know, you kind of flown under the radar, you know, like on a national perspective in terms of, you know, the HBCUs and getting a lot of love, you know, from the general public. Do you sense that, and how do you feel about that?
Well, you know, that's something that we don't worry about too much. At the end of the day, we're our goal is to play football late November and December, and we put ourselves in position to do that. And when you do that, you know, the people have nothing else to talk about but you, because other teams that they were talking about aren't playing anymore. So it's good to be in a position that they have to talk about it now.
Yeah. So what has enabled you to do that? I mean, this is, you know, you've put together quite a run at Bowie.
I think it goes off, hat goes off to my coaches as well as my senior leadership. The guys have done a great job just, first of all, buying into the program, buying into the vision, and also holding each other accountable. And something we talk about every day is going 1-0 for the day. Not just on the football field on game day, but every day in practice, every day in the classroom. And when you do those things the right way, you have an opportunity to be successful on the football field.
Well, you see that you're stressing that, and it seems like it's been a march of this work for you. But do you ever see your guys let up at all, on knowing they're pretty much just how talented they are and how they've really had a lot of success? Do you see them getting easing up any week during the season?
We've had some let ups. You know, we definitely haven't played perfect football at all. You know, by any stretch of the means. We won the game last week and scored 50 points. But well, we had a lot of errors during that game, and that's what we talked about in Sunday film session. We didn't watch any of the good plays. We watched 25 of the bad plays, offensively and defensively, as well as special teams. And in order to accomplish our ultimate goal, we must, you know, play better football. And that's been our the marching orders that was given out to the guys. And you know, we've had a good week of practice thus far.
Yeah. So how have you been able to assemble the kind of talent that you've assembled? I know you're a D.C. guy, but still, you know, being in the D.C. area, being a Division II program, you know, with Maryland and some of the other FBS and FCS schools, you know, regularly raiding this area.
That's a good question. And, I mean, our philosophy is find a good quality student athletes and developing guys. A lot of times you'll have a program that's trying to get that guy that's ready, already made. For us, you know, we've been fortunate enough to redshirt probably about 90% of our freshman class since I've been at Bowie. And what that does is give us an extra year, an opportunity to develop that student athlete. It gives that student athlete an extra year to get, you know, get stronger in the weight room and understand football. So it's a lot of talented football players in the area here, which is very good and works in our favor. But we've been redshirt about 90% of our freshman class, and we're starting to see the return on those decisions.
Yeah. Well, tell us about your quarterback, Jerome Johnson, who's had a really fine season, and it seems like you've been blessed with good quarterback play for the past several years, going back to Amir Hall, you know, the Black College Football Player of the Year, who was your quarterback and led you so well.
Well, I think two things. Tyree Reed has been my quarterback coach, now my offensive coordinator for the last 2 years. So he's been doing a great job developing those guys along, you know, and I had Moses Weir last year as my offensive coordinator. So, you know, they take great pride in preparing those guys to play. Jerome is a guy who transferred into us in January. And he got all the reps for the most part during the spring practice and showed that he had the ability Gaston Cooper was actually the starter coming into the season, and Gaston took an injury, had an injury early in the year, gave Jerome an opportunity to play, and Jerome has taken advantage of his opportunity. He's a dual threat guy. You know, he's a guy that's thrown for almost 400 yards in one game and rushed for 200 yards in a game. So he's a guy that it's a problem for defenses to prepare for him because he's a dual threat guy.
Well, what do you see as his potential? How good can he be?
I think he's not anywhere close to his ceiling right now. I think he's really just learning the game. He's one of those guys that has been fortunate to have success because he's a good athlete. But now he's really learning the game and he's studying the game. And you can see him now understanding blitzes and checking us out of certain run plays. And that's because he's becoming comfortable with the system and understanding what defenses can do. And that's what we got with Amir probably his junior year. And, you know, it's a joy to see when you see the quarterback out there being a coach on the field. So Jerome isn't there yet, but he's heading in that direction.
When you guys have such an outstanding season, to the victor go to spoils, and it seems like the postseason honors, everybody picked up. The conference recognized you as coach of the year, and you have defensive and offensive players of the year. Is it something that you readily saw as the course of the season went along that you had guys who were capable of those things, or how did you see it?
I mean, I know what type of ball club we have with Temple this year. Like the individual awards are going to come. Our goal is to win a national championship as a football team. And once we take care of things as a team, the individual awards come. But it's always good to get recognized by your peers and as well as other coaches recognize your players' talent that's on your team. So I think, you know, all in all, it's definitely great to receive those individual awards. But, you know, one of our major awards that we're looking to seek is that championship on Saturday.
Well, you would talk about, you know, Fayetteville State and what it's going to take for you to win that championship on Saturday and ultimately the national championship that you alluded to?
Well, Coach Hayes and that staff at Fayetteville, they do a great job preparing their guys. Offensively, they're aggressive with regards to running the football, very physical up front, have two good running backs that we must stop. You know, in order for us to be successful Saturday in order to win national championships, you know, you're playing in cold weather. You have to stop the run, and you got to be able to run the ball. You know, and that's something that we've been preaching to our guys from day one. Thus far, our defense has done a great job in the run game. Offensively, the same thing. We must play outside of the ball. You know, just because it's a little chilly outside, we're still going to throw the ball around a little bit, and we're going to run the ball. So we must be physical and execute in all three phases. I think we have a good opportunity to win the game.
Well, you know, talk about the prospect of winning a national championship. I know that's a national championship. I know that's always the goal. But how realistic do you feel that is, and what would that take?
I feel it's very realistic. We had an opportunity last year to make it to the second round. We beat a West Alabama team in the first round at home, and then we ended up losing that second week to a very good South Dolphins team who ended up winning the national championship. So for me, now as a head coach, I have a reference point. I know what a national championship team looks like in Valdosta last year, and they beat us up pretty good, and that was something that, you know, we kind of used as energy going into the offseason as a weight room and understanding that, hey, we have to do more. And it's very competitive in Division II football. So, you know, you got to have a little injury-free and, I guess, a little luck on your side as well when you're trying to win a national championship because, as you know, in December, everybody's banged up. But it's just a matter of guys executing at a high level during that time of the year.
So how big of an advantage, Coach Ford, is it for you to have a game like a playoff game at your place as opposed to somewhere else? And, you know, I guess you put in bids for the first couple of rounds. How big of an advantage do you think of it? Or is it just being in the postseason is irrespective of where you play?
No, I think it's a big advantage. In order for your guys to play in front of their home crowd, you're talking about playing, you're one of 28 teams still playing football out of 168 Division II football programs. I think it's a great honor, number one. And number two, I think it's definitely a great advantage. You know, you don't have to worry about getting on the bus and traveling and dealing with the opposing team fans. You know, your fans are able to come see you play, your family, So I think it's great. You know, it's playing in an environment that they're comfortable in. I think that helped us last year against the West Alabama team, you know, which was a very good team. And like I said, then we had to travel to Valdosta, and, you know, they had their own crowd. We didn't travel with many people that particular trip. So, you know, it was very challenging.
Well, let me ask you about Amir Hall. You had referred to him, and I guess to me, given his credentials and his accomplishments, to be honest, I was not overly shocked when he didn't get drafted because of the history of that kind of thing going on, but I was just really baffled that he didn't get a free agent opportunity or anything. What was up with that? Do you have any idea?
You know what, I'm still a little baffled at the word that you use about the whole situation. Just talking about a young man that graduated 3.5 years, put up the numbers he put up on the football field, great character guy, not to get an opportunity to play on Sundays. I think it shows us all we still have a long way to go with regard to that position. And, you know, he won the Doug Williams Award 2 years in a row, Deacon Jones Award two years in a row. So, in our mind, he was the best football fan, best out of college football. And for him not to get an opportunity to play on Sundays, I think it's not a good look at all. But his spirits are high. He's a well-rounded young man. Comes from a great family. He's working. You know, he'll be there at the game Saturday. Yeah, you know, I talk to him pretty much bi-weekly now. But he's going to be successful in whatever comes.
Well, that's good. That's good to hear. But I still feel that's a crime against nature that, you know, he didn't at least get an opportunity. You know, and
I totally agree. Yeah, and as the head coach, I didn't get any negative feedback at all through the whole process. So we had he had 32 teams come check him out during the course of the season, junior and senior year. So I was really surprised as well. And to this day, I still haven't heard a reason why. You know, he didn't get an opportunity
at some point. Yeah, well, you know, I guess the more things change, sometimes the more they remain the same.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay. Okay, Coach, I know you have to run and you have some other commitments, and we certainly appreciate you taking the time to, you know, check in with us and, you know, catch us up on Boise State football, and all the best to you and Bulldogs going forward, and good luck on Saturday and the rest of the way during the postseason run.
Thank you, guys. Coach. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Okay, take care.
Alrighty, guys.
There's a guy there. He seems like, you know, that sounds like someone who's used to success.
Right.
Put it that way.
He's used
to
success.
Very matter of fact.
He's used to success, and he expects to be successful.
Absolutely. But you mentioned, you talked about Amir Hall and not getting a shot. And we can roll back in before we started talking about Colin Kaepernick and his weekend tryout at the Falcons facility this weekend. Most, if not all, the NFL teams are going to have representatives there. What's your take on this?
Well, you know, the eternal skeptic, eternal pessimist in me, I just don't see anything coming from it. I don't trust the NFL. I mean, okay, what is different now than 3 years ago? Other than, you know,
he's gotten older.
He's been away from the game 3 years. I mean, the quarterback situation in the NFL was bad
just as
3 years ago. It was bad 3 years ago, and it's bad now. You know, there's just not really 32 starting caliber quarterbacks in the league, let alone, you know, backups or even, you know, third string guys, and they didn't see fit to give him an opportunity then. So why now? And I, like I said, it's just maybe it's the pessimist in me, but I just see it as a sham, you know. But the flip side of that is that if you're Kaepernick, you have to You have to show up.
You got
to
do it. Otherwise, people say, what have you been screaming about the whole thing?
Exactly. Exactly. You know, we gave him an opportunity, and he didn't want it. He didn't take it. So, you know, really, to me, it's a no-win situation for him. Now, I talked to Jared Bell, the fan columnist for NFL columnist at USA Today, and he thinks that something will come of it, maybe not immediately, but perhaps down the road. And he knows far more about what's going on than I do, but I don't see it.
There are a lot of bad football teams out there right now who need somebody to need a jolt with somebody like a Kaepernick.
Yeah.
And
I
don't know who the Lions played this past weekend with a nondescript guy.
Yeah.
The Bengals are playing with a nondescript guy. And Phillip Rivers, I'm not saying he's nondescript, but he hadn't been playing well enough to win in San Diego. I mean, you can't swing a dead cat without hitting a bad quarterback in the NFL right now. There are only so many elite guys and good guys, and then you have everybody else.
Yeah.
So.
Well, you know, I hope that I'm wrong. I hope that I'm wrong. But when you look, okay, we just say look at, forget about the starting quarterbacks. We just give them the starting quarterbacks, even though there aren't 32 starting capital quarterbacks. How many teams have dependable backup quarterbacks?
One.
The New Orleans Saints.
That's it. That's it. Teddy Bridgewater.
Yeah, the New Orleans Saints. And that didn't just start today. It's been that way for a while. So again, I ask, why now? What I do think is that this has to come home to roost with the owners, because I think if football people had been allowed to make the decision on this thing from the beginning, there would have been multiple teams that would have signed him. But when the owners, since the owners have the final say, it wasn't happening.
Those coaches who were denied the chance to at least give them a look-see and have a bad season, they shouldn't be penalized by losing their jobs.
Yeah,
because they were going
to
do what they were going to try to do to win games.
To win. They're trying to win a football game.
Right. And for whatever political fallout and the calculus that they made in marketing and PR hits and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my goodness. What's the cat with the Seahawks the other night? Gordon. How many chances
Josh
has
Gordon.
He got?
Josh,
yeah.
Josh Gordon.
And then
exactly.
You got the Tyreek Hill is back with the Chiefs.
Yeah,
and
Kareem Hunt.
Yeah, these guys, multiple chances. And those sins are far less grievous than for protesting somebody who sees injustices in America, which gives you an idea what the ownership, as a group, what the NFL ownership is about.
Right.
And what the league is about.
Not really about much.
Right.
Much. Yeah.
You know, to tolerate those things. So you're hoping Kaepernick does well. Our producer, Ricky Hampton, said Eric Reed, Kaepernick's teammate there with the 49ers, Reed, has moved on and now to Carolina Panthers. And by the way, he's been drug tested. Like every time he turns the light switch on at his house, somebody's there with a cup for him to pee in. they're trying to catch him doing something. But our producer, Ricky Hampton, says that Eric Reed calls this whole thing disingenuous. And it smacks of that because you're just halfway through the season and people, you know, it's going to take him a while to get acclimated to an offense or get into shape. And by that time, it's just a waste, another year gone.
Well, exactly. You know, it'll be next year before he sees the field, if he sees the field then. I mean, you know, OTAs and all of that stuff. And
so, yeah, this
you know, they sign him. put him through all of that and then say, well, you know, we gave him an opportunity, but he just wasn't. No, he didn't have it. Well, you know, after 3 years, I mean, do you really expect him to be the same player that he was then? I mean, really?
Right. No, but I think that's asking a bit much. Unless he's been in this absolutely incredible shape. He's been in Atlanta.
Even if you're in incredible shape,
it's not football shape.
It's not football. You know, you haven't played. You're not up to, you know, game speed. You know, when was the last time he was tackled? He ran with a football under his arm and somebody was chasing him? You know, when was the last time he threw a pass with a defender hanging on him and two defenders over on his receiver? You know, and, you know, I mean, those things, you know, you have to hone those skills in real situations. And that hasn't been happening, you know. And I really wish him well, and I hope that I'm wrong. But I don't see it happening. I just do not trust the NFL. I just do not trust them.
That's a healthy skepticism. Yeah.
You know, they have a proven track record.
Hey guys, let me read this quote, the rest of this quote from Reed for you. It's disingenuous, Reed said. They want the appearance of giving Colin a chance, but they gave him 2 hours' notice and to tell that it had to be on Saturday when they know the decision makers are going to be traveling. So is this real? We'll see.
I think not. But, you know, we're not supposed to look at that. You know, we just see the big picture.
The superficiality of it. It's happening. And we don't look at all the nuances of it, which nobody really wants to get into that.
But, you know, I mean, if you're going to give me a chance, give me a fighting chance. You know, don't send me bear hunting with a switch.
Well, you know, this feels like, it feels like the Rooney Rule. You know, these guys know who they have in mind for their head coach, and they'll try out a couple of minority candidates just to check the boxes.
Saying, to
the letter of the law, we fulfilled it. But,
Well, you know, and you have to get a devil his due. They know some tricks. And, you know, they don't mind, you know, trying to pull them off. No.
Well, it doesn't make it any more, that they know it is one thing, but making it more palatable is another. And it doesn't smell right, doesn't taste right. When I first saw it, I mean, I just kind of just rolled my eyes thinking, yeah, this is really going to happen.
Yeah.
The more you read about it, the more you see that this is a PR play as opposed to something substantive.
So, you know, like my man Satchel Paige said, you know, about his pitching style. You know, you throw him peas at the knees, and when they're looking here, you throw it there, and that's exactly what the NFL does. That's what they do.
Yeah,
and they're good at it.
They are. Moving off of that for a hot second. Just a taste of the NBA this evening, where Anthony Davis took a shot in the ribs the other night. I think it was against the Phoenix Suns, and they had an 8-point win against Phoenix. But he took a shot in the ribs, left the game, came back, finished playing. Long story short, tonight the Lakers are playing the Golden State Warriors, and he will not play. And do you know what that means, right there, Roscoe?
Here we go again.
Here we go again with the injuries.
Right.
And two, as bad as Warriors, if Golden State were the Golden State of last year, Anthony Davis probably would have played tonight.
Well,
the Lakers' calculus
is
the Lakers' calculus tonight is they can win without him.
It's a given. It's a given. It's a given that the Warriors are not the Warriors. I mean, that's a given. I mean, come on.
Nobody's starting from last year.
And that's what I'm saying. So what's the news in that? If you lose all your starters from a championship-caliber team, what do you expect? I mean, if you lose one starter, some teams are wrecked, let alone five.
Right.
And that's why I get a little bored with people talking about how bad the Warriors are. But, you know, let's talk about these teams that are just as bad as the Warriors and have been as bad as the Warriors for a long time. They was as bad as the Warriors last year. They was as bad as the Warriors are this year 2 years ago. And they are going to be bad. The Warriors will be good again before they will be. You know.
Which is interesting to say, given the composition of the rosters, to say that they will be better in a better shape in 2 years than the Lakers would be.
Well, but you know, you just look at the overall organization, the composition of the roster, the front office,
the whole thing,
and the recent history, really. What have the Lakers done recently?
Oh, they've done nothing to make any, to raise any eyebrows. Or
you know,
in Anthony Davis's situation, raise an eyebrow.
They have done nothing to
excite folks, to get people thinking they're going to challenge for anything in the West.
Well, you know, they've done a lot on paper.
Right.
They've done a lot on paper, you know, bringing in.
But there's no more threat than the Sacramento Kings out there.
You know,
bringing in
LeBron, bringing in Anthony Davis, but
bringing in Boogie Cousins,
you know,
bringing in having Rondo come back, they kept Kyle Kuzma, their rising star, and yet they are still not somebody to really care about, as opposed to the teams they beat last night. The Phoenix Suns, who are surprising everybody, even in their losses, folks are saying, "Look out! Don't sleep on the Suns."
Yeah, well, you know, it's a long way to June. It is a long, long way to June. We're not even to December.
Oh, so you said it's a chance for my Hawks to come in, and I'm not going there. One more note before we get up out of here: it seems that the Houston Astros may have stolen the 2017 World Series. A former pitcher for the Astros is out there telling folks that they used a center field camera to steal signs. And that was the year they won the championship in 2017. And one guy related the incident that happened when he was a pitcher for Chicago White Sox. Danny Farquhar was saying there was a banging from the dugout, almost like a batting helmet, like a bat hitting the back rack every time a changeup signal got put down. But they were looking at the camera in center field, letting the batter know a change was coming by making a banging sound. And one time they threw the sign down and heard the banging, and then they went out and changed signals. So that was something that seems like too much of a coincidence. And, you know, everybody's supposed to steal signs. But I think Major League Baseball will probably go look into something like this and do something about the proliferation of cameras all over the ball field that may give some teams who are better at taking advantage of things. I started to say cheating, but taking advantage of situations more so than other teams.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, this has gone on since baseball has been played. You know, they just become more sophisticated with it as, you know, technology has developed. So, I mean, what are you going to do? If somebody gives a sign, somebody's going to figure out a way to steal it. I mean, that's just how it is.
It's a competitive nature thing, for sure. And speaking of competition, we wish Coach Wilson and Bowie State. Much luck in their competition this weekend. They play Fayetteville State for the CIAA championship. We just wanted to just appreciate him stopping by, and we think we had a really good night tonight with this vast amount of number of topics that are really relevant and pertinent to what's going on and off the field. So
we
look forward to having a great show again next week.
Yep.
Yes, sir.
And
so until next time, Roscoe, what do we need to do?
Express yourself. You don't never need help from nobody else. All you got to do now.